I'm Joy Manning, a freelance writer focused on food and health.
And I'm Marisa McClellan, creator of Food in Jars.
Welcome to Local Mouthful. We're here to talk shop with obsessed home cooks everywhere. This week, we're talking about shakshuka, date paste, and wedding registries. But first, something we read this week. Did you see this article on taste cooking about chocolate chip cookies?
I did. Emily, the author, Emily Pastor, is a dear friend of mine. And so when she posted about it on Facebook, I went right over to read it.
And she's been on our podcast, has she not? At least once, possibly twice.
I think so, yeah.
I mean, maybe Emily is a listener, if so, hi. And also, as an expert, we had another friend of the podcast, Estelle Tracy, who is a chocolate expert. But let's tell everybody what this article was about. The headline was "Putting the Chips Back in Chocolate Chip Cookies."
Yeah, and so basically, it addressed the thing that in recent years recipe writers have had a lot of disdain for chocolate chips. They're like, don't use chocolate chips in cookies. Take good quality chocolate and chop it up. And this article kind of talks about what's the difference, why you might go for one versus the other, and also like what a pain it is to not just be able to open a bag of chocolate chips and pour them into your cookie batter.
I can't even recall a time that I have made chocolate chip cookies with anything other than chocolate chips personally.
I have only done it at times when I'm out of chocolate chips and I have chocolate and I don't want to go to the store. So like I often have one of those pound plus bars from Trader Joe's.
Oh, I remember those from pre-pandemic life.
Yeah. And those are great for things like they have a semi-sweet bar that I love to use in my flourless chocolate cake. And so I often, although I mean, I haven't made one of those cakes in years, but those were my wedding cakes. I made them for my sister's wedding. And so there was a period of time where I always had this chocolate around just in case I needed to make flourless chocolate cake. And so there have been times when I have chopped up a portion of one of those bars to use in chocolate chip cookies because I was out of chocolate chips, not because I thought it was better.
One of the disadvantages that Emily talked about was how when you chop the chocolate, it kind of just like bleeds into the batter.
Yeah.
Without a clear delineation between cookie and chip, which I have to say, I'm in favor of a distinct, clear line between your cookie and your chip.
Yeah, me too. I really like a chocolate chip. I mean, I understand how some chocolate chips are perhaps of lower quality in terms of the chocolate than others, but I feel like it's not impossible to get really good quality chocolate chips, and they're great in cookies and all sorts of things. I'm a fan.
Yeah, it was definitely some of the higher end chocolate chips on the market were talked up in the article, and I have noticed as a eliminating animal products from my diet. A lot of the lower quality chocolate chips have milk solids in them. So I think vegan chocolate chips are de facto better quality, or at least that's been my experience. Although there can be a little tricky to find. You have to check. But yeah, I thought it was a fun piece. Interesting. I'm definitely team chip. I'm really glad that Emily brought this advocacy for the humble chocolate chip to the forefront.
Me too.
Of course, as always, we'll share the link in the show notes. And I know that you'll all have your opinions too. I'm sure we have plenty of chopped chocolate devotees in our group here. So let us know what you think.
No shame either way. Let's all be team
chocolate.
Have
what you like. Yeah. Have what you like. That's ultimately what I think at the end of the day.
Absolutely.
If you like your chunks, go. That's totally cool. I'm not telling you what to do. And I don't think Emily is either, actually.
No.
But don't disparage the chip is all we ask, I think. So this week I have been playing around with vegan shakshuka.
Tell me about it.
Well, probably everyone is well acquainted with shakshuka at this point. I feel like it's been a mainstay at brunch at restaurants for a long time. And what you have is sort of a spiced, Middle Eastern leaning tomato sauce. And usually, you cook eggs in it. You typically will make this tomato and red pepper sauce with your spices and your herbs. And then you make little wells for your eggs. You crack your eggs into it. And then you sort of just cook your eggs, right? You cover the pot and you cook your eggs right in the tomato mixture. And it's pretty delightful. I've ordered it many times. One of my faves. So I wanted to do it with tofu to make it vegan. So that I could, again, love and enjoy it. And it works very well. Tofu has like an egg quality, in my opinion.
Yeah.
So I started, of course, with your and my favorite brand of tofu, fresh tofu wing tofu, which has, to me, the cleanest, nicest flavor.
We had it for dinner last night.
Oh, what did you do your sheet pan tofu?
No, I did. I dry fried the tofu in just a dry nonstick skillet and then made a little sauce with soy sauce and, you know, all that. It was basically beef with broccoli, only it was tofu with broccoli.
Sounds good to me.
Anyway, yeah. Sorry, so I didn't mean
that. A fresh tofu, whether it's fresh tofu ink or a fresh tofu that you have where you live, is like makes any kind of tofu dish better. And that's the case with this shakshuka as well. A couple of other things that I noticed mattered with this recipe is like, I don't know what kind of canned tomato products most people keep around, but I typically have not stocked crushed tomatoes. Mm. And I need to start keeping them around because crushed tomatoes made the sauce very thick. It really clung to the tofu, which you want. And it just had like a more concentrated flavor that I really enjoyed. And now I realize I'm going to just keep them around as a standard addition to my canned tomato collection.
That makes sense. I mean, a crushed tomato doesn't have water added. So right. Like a whole peeled tomato is often packed in like a watery sauce or something. So
do you keep them on hand?
I mostly only have my own home canned tomatoes, which are whole peeled or sauce, but I have always loved the crushed tomato. And so you make me think I need to buy some.
Yeah. And as a side note, another friend of the podcast, Peggy Paul Casella, has a blog called, what is her blog called? Friday Night Pizza?
Thursday Night Pizza.
Sorry, Peggy. But she recently had an Instagram post about crushed tomatoes where she had some kind of special New Jersey tomato crushed canned brand that she loved and she ordered a case of it. So now, of course, I want to copy Peggy and order a case of crushed tomatoes for my house. Anyway, I digress. The other important part is the spices. I like to use plenty of coriander and cumin, and I experimented with grinding the whole spices before I added them, and I think it makes a big difference. Like a fresh ground spice, yum. And then there's the question of spicy or not spicy. How do you like your shakshuka?
Because of the people I tend to cook for, I go not spicy. But I can almost guarantee that you went spicy.
Well, I made it sort of not spicy, thinking of other people. But what I was really longing to put on top of it was the shakshuka. The shug. I used to buy that at Trader Joe's. I've made it. It's green, like a very
spicy green sauce.
Yeah. So next time I'll do that. And of course, then it got like a huge pile of fresh cilantro at the end, served with like nice thick slices of mighty bread toast. It was so yummy.
So I have one question though. Sure. Did you just cube the tofu or did you pure it? It was just cubed tofu in there?
I cubed it and then just threw it in. I was willing to do something else to it if I felt it needed it, but I don't know. Like the eggs are just poached in the tomato sauce, so why not just poach the tofu?
I was just thinking it'd be fun to try to replicate the egg experience a little more by like making a like chickpea flour and tofu puree. Mm-hmm. And then making those little wells and letting it cook in there and seeing if that would like give you that eggy consistency.
Well, of course, what it doesn't have is the yolk.
Yeah.
Now, there's a recipe for like an egg, like a vegan egg yolk on the blog. It doesn't taste like chicken. I've never had it, but you could make that and drizzle it all over it, which I don't know. One thing I've realized as a plant-based eater is like the taste of eggs is not something that I especially love.
Really?
In that recipe that I mentioned from It Doesn't Taste Like Chicken, the main ingredient is something called black salt, which has like that sort of sulfurous egg flavor.
Yeah.
And I don't really need that. That's not for me. When it comes to an egg yolk, what I like is the richness, which I accomplished by just using a lot of olive oil in my sauce. So different strokes for different folks. I do think a chickpea dumpling would be good in this as well. You could also like just slice one of those tubes of polenta from the store.
Yeah, that would be a good, like, easy, delicious thing to do.
Yeah. So I don't know. I was really into it. I thought it was quite tasty.
Yeah, it sounds great. I also wonder, like, I know that we love the fresh tofu, but a silken tofu might give you that texture. I don't know. Just think.
For me, the silken tofu that you get in those vacuum sealed pouches has a lot of good uses, but like in terms of just eating it straight, it doesn't taste good to me.
Fair enough.
So I think if you could get an equivalent soft tofu, like something that was freshly made and not packed to be stored for 1,000 years, then maybe that would be extremely delicious as well.
Just, you know, I'm not trying to spoil what sounds like was a delicious thing. I just made my brain turn on.
No, I hear you. I wonder if I can get like a fresh soft tofu somewhere. Probably. There's a place in Chinatown that does these like breakfast. It's like soft, fresh soft tofu then with toppings on it. And I have always wanted to go check that out, but I have not as of yet. Something like that, like something of that quality would probably be excellent.
When we can all gather again, Joy, let's go have that together.
Okay. I'm sure that this is not the last time I'll make a vegan shakshuka, so to be continued.
I look forward to hearing more. So can I tell you about something that I made this week that
Please
was delicious?
Do.
So a couple times now I've partnered with the California Date people for like a sponsored Instagram post. And so the second time we partnered, they said, hey, could you make like a date paste or something like that for your recipe? And I said, sure. Not having made a date paste before. I have done lots of date involved preserves over the years because I used dates in my Naturally Sweet book as one of the sweeteners, but I hadn't done something that was just strictly a date sort of spread. And so I did a little research and then I headed to the kitchen and kind of borrowed ideas from a bunch of sources and made this little batch. I used a pound of dates, pitted, and then I put them in a heat proof bowl and poured a cup and a half of boiling water over them and let them sit for a couple of hours until they were really tender and like the water itself had almost become a little bit of syrupy. And then I put all of that into my blender. And I would say if you don't have like a high speed blender, that a food processor or an immersion blender might be your better choice here. But I have that Breville high speed blender with the tamper. And so I, you know, worked it through with the tamper. I added a little bit of ground cardamom. And so right now all it was in my blender was the dates, the water, and the ground cardamom. And it was, I mean, just then, so good. But what I did is I put it in a saucepan and put it on the stove and warmed it, because in my experience with dates, I know that when you heat them up, they lose that kind of stickiness a little bit. And, you know, you like that date stickiness, but when you want it to be a spread, you want it to spread nicely. And if it's too sticky, it won't spread well. And so I just warmed it until it lost that extreme stickiness. And oh my God, Joy, it's so good. If we were recording in person, I would have brought you a jar. Like the little kind of edge from the cardamom with this very sweet, kind of deeply flavored, caramely note from the dates is so good. It is my new favorite thing to eat on a peanut butter sandwich.
Ooh.
Because the combination of like the salty nutty peanuts with this kind of rich caramely, but not sweet, but not too sweet date paste. It is so good.
I'm a huge date fan, as you well know.
Yes.
What about, I guess because you put it in the high speed blender, the skin on the date was not an issue.
I think the combination of soaking it for a while and then the high speed blender, it's really smooth.
What kind of dates did you start with? Did they send you some?
They sent me two varieties, and I used the medjool. Mm-hmm. Is that how you say it? I never know if I'm saying that right.
I think that's right.
You know, you really want that kind of soft, sticky fresh as you can find dates. I mean, you could use ones that were like older. You just need to soak them a little bit longer, or maybe use a little bit more water. But I found that, you know, they had such nice texture. But yeah, it is delicious. And it makes me, the only thing I might do differently next time is add just a drop or two of lemon juice, because I think it might brighten and add a little extra nuance to the flavor. But yeah, it was really good.
It sounds amazing.
Yeah. And I'm surprised it's not more like more of a thing here, because I'm certain that like you could make it shelf stable easily. It's like, why is this not something that people, because it, like it's paleo, because dates are okay, I think, on like certain phases of the paleo diet. Like, why is date paste not like going like fire across the nation? It's so good.
I don't know. Maybe that's your next project. The Food in Jars branded date paste.
We should suggest it to the Zoom people, because they have their date syrup.
They right, should do which I love, and I put in my muesli all the time.
Oh, it's so good. Yeah, but this date paste, so easy to make at home and so delicious. One thing I did do is the batch I made 3 cups. And so I kept 1 half-pint jar, which holds a cup, in the fridge. And I then spread it across 2 more half-pints so that I could freeze the other 2. Because in my experience, a naturally sweetened preserve or something that's made with just fruit or dried fruit, it loses quality and color fast. So by storing it in the freezer, it'll hold a little bit better than just keeping it all in the fridge.
And where does the recipe live? Is it out there in the world yet?
I'm going to put it up on Instagram today. Okay, so it'll, by the time this airs, it'll be up on my Instagram.
Neat. Well, that sounds very good. I wonder, the thing is, like, I have plenty of dates around, but I love eating them so much. I wonder if I would feel like I was sacrificing them to the spread.
Well, you know what I mean? Just think, now you can eat dates on your peanut butter.
Well, I eat a peanut butter stuffed date all the time. It's like a totally delicious thing. I'll report back.
It's kind of, I will say that it's kind of nice to have the date flavor in a different texture.
Yeah. Dates are so good.
They are so good. I mean, to think that a date just grows like that, that you don't have to do anything to it to make it as it is.
It is caramelly.
Yeah. It's so good.
Well, I look forward to seeing your recipe.
So let's talk about our wild card topic today.
Well, recently we got an email from a local Mouthful listener, Daniel, and he asked us for advice about a wedding registry.
Yeah.
Which is a topic I have some opinions about.
I do too.
How about you?
I certainly wish I could go back in time and redo my wedding registry, because I got some great stuff, but I also got some stuff that I'm like, why did I register for that? Because I think we think of wedding registries as like, oh, let's just throw anything on there. No, you should be really thoughtful about what
you choose. I think one of the issues with wedding registries is that, and this doesn't apply to Daniel, who's a legitimate adult, but sometimes when people get married in their 20s, they don't know what they don't know.
Yeah.
You know, and the wedding registry reflects that. So you see sort of like really goofy stuff on there and a conspicuous absence of some of the most important tools in the kitchen, if you ask me.
Totally.
What's something that you registered for that now you look back and you're like, was that a good idea?
I registered for an electric mocha pot.
Interesting.
Thinking, oh, this is great. I don't have to put it on the stove. I can do, and it never worked well. And then I looked at the reviews and like, yeah, these just don't work very well.
And I think that's like, a great example.
Yeah. I'm like, why did I do that? I should have registered for a stovetop mocha pot. Because the one I bought to replace the electric one, I've now had for 11 years. So.
Yeah. I didn't actually register at all when I got married.
Oh, really?
I really, when I got married, what I would have wanted most was just to be, legally married at City Hall on my lunch break. Like, I was super uncomfortable with all the things wedding related. And I didn't have a shower. I didn't have a registry, which meant I got a lot of interesting wedding gifts. At any rate.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
I got some good stuff, though. I did have the forethought. I registered for a 7.5-quart and a 9-quart Le Creuset pot.
And those are great options.
They are great. I use them regularly. They've been great. I will say that I do use my all-clad Dutch oven more than any other piece of cookware. So for me personally, at this point, when I sort of recommend things for people's registry, or just like if someone says to me, what's the best Dutch oven I could buy? I often point them in the clad direction because it can go in the oven, but you never run the risk of ruining your enamel lining.
Mm-hmm. The only thing with all clad, though, is it doesn't work on induction.
They have some lines now that do.
Oh, do they?
Yeah.
I've always run into that issue with them. The thing that I see missing most conspicuously is sheet pans. Why does no one ever register for sheet pans? It's such an important thing to have in your kitchen.
I know. I use mine every day.
Every day. I have, I think, 5 or 6. How many do you think you have?
I have 5 half sheets. I have 3/4 sheets and I have 3/8 sheets. And I use these days, because I'm often heating up food for the babies, I use those tiny 8-sheet.
Oh, those are great for that kind of thing.
In the toaster oven every day.
Yeah, I don't, I think two, you gotta have 2 of these on your registry at a minimum if you don't already have them, as well as the baking racks that go in them.
Yeah.
Oftentimes you need to elevate something off the surface of that. I would put those as a mandatory wedding registry item if you don't already have them.
Yeah, no, I think that those are great. I also, this is going to sound like a silly one, but, for me, the other, especially now that I have children, but even before, I use like my little small butter warmer saucepan.
Oh yeah. I have
all
the
time, you know, and not really even for butter, like heating up a little bit of milk to go in coffee or tea, or, boiling a little bit of water to go over the dates I was just talking about. Or, so those, that teeny tiny saucepan that
I use mine a lot too.
Yeah.
That would be a good one.
That's one that people often overlook, and it's so useful to have.
And, you know, this is sort of a larger thing, but I often see people registering for sets of stuff on their registry, like a set of cookware. And then that will always include stuff you don't need, and it will always not include stuff you do need. So I think you should take a piecemeal approach to that. And that brings me to knives, like the block of knives.
Oh, yeah. Don't do that.
No. No. There's definitely knives in there that you don't need. And it is almost certainly lacking knives you do need.
Yeah. I mean, basically, when you're getting knives, a nice chef's knife is always useful. A bread knife, a paring knife. Like, those are the 3 of the classics that people recommend. I also like an in-between knife. Oh, gosh. A petty knife is what they call it. Something that's got some length but isn't as big or heavy as a chef's knife is one that I reach for a lot for like cutting up apples or, you know, cutting toast into pieces when I don't want to pull out a bigger knife.
I also recommend a boning knife, even though I no longer bone anything. It is excellent for taking the bones out of meat, but it's also good for a variety of tasks that you need a sharp, thin knife for. Recently on one of our local Mouthful members Patreon coffee meetings, we talked about how to cut cheesecake. And you gotta have that knife for, in my opinion, for that. Another one that I think is useful for most people is a cleaver, like a Chinese cleaver. Do you have that?
I have one. I almost never use it though.
Oh,
but I should pull it out. And then you should also get yourself a good quality. If you're registering and you've registered for your individual knives, register for a good quality knife sharpener, because no knife is going to be good if you can't keep it sharp.
Right. And I always tell people, I think that instead of getting like a super fancy knife that you're worried about sharpening, like just get a knife. Oh, like a Victorinox makes a lot of great knives, like that are not super expensive that you don't have to fret about sharpening.
Yeah. Yeah. OXO used to make, I don't know if they're still making knives, but they had sort of a good solid like $50 chef knife, which is inexpensive when it comes to chef's knives.
For a chef knife, yeah. Some other stuff that I think is silly on wedding registries is crystal glassware. Like, I don't know anybody that's been married more than 5 years that has any of the fancy glassware that they were gifted, because it breaks.
I didn't register for any crystal or fancy stuff. We inherited Scott's mom's crystal, like she had champagne glasses and like goblets.
Either they're broken or you never use them.
We never use them. And they're crystal. They're like, you know, super fancy crystal from Ireland. And they just sit there, but we can't get rid of them because they were,
right,
you know, his mom's. So yeah, and especially we don't drink alcohol anymore. So like, we do have some champagne flutes. And I'm like, we should probably get rid of these because we don't use them ever.
I drink kombucha and other sparkly beverages out of my wine glasses and champagne flutes, but I should say that they are from IKEA. They're perfectly good and they are virtually indestructible.
Yeah. I will say, like, if you want to register for some high ticket kitchen items on your registry and you don't have like a really good food processor or immersion blender or a good
Vitamix.
Vitamix is always a good option.
KitchenAid stand mixer.
Yeah. Like those are the things, like if you're going to splash out or someone's going to splash out for you, a really good toaster oven, like one of the Breville toaster ovens. Like those are the things where if you want to have some high ticket items, if you have some people that you know want to kind of treat you, like those are the things to put on your registry because those are going to last forever.
I could not agree more.
Yeah. I mean, I've had my KitchenAid stand mixer now since like 2005. So what is that? 16 years? It's old enough to drive and it's going strong.
I bought mine in 2000. When I first met Dan in the spring of 2002. Our first holiday season together was that year. And I was, I believe, still in graduate school. And I bought him, or maybe I had just recently graduated and was like piecemealing together a quote unquote livelihood adjuncting. And I bought him a KitchenAid stand mixer in 2002 for Christmas, very fearful that we would break up and I would lose this investment. But Dan enjoyed baking, so I got it for him. And this is the stand mixer that we're using to this day. So it will be 20 next year.
Wow. I love that.
Anyway, again, yeah, we didn't register. And if we would have, we already had it. But yes, I did want to mention one more category of stuff.
Which,
like every young couple or couple getting married thinks they're going to be like entertaining all the time and they need like entertaining specific cookware or kitchen items like the chip and dip.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
I don't think that those are worth adding to your registry. Anyway, we could obviously do a special episode about this.
I just want to say I have a silver chip and dip I inherited from my grandmother that I literally have not ever taken out of its felt bag. And it's been in my possession for 19 years.
Yeah. Anyway, we should obviously make a guide, a little local mouthful guide to wedding registries.
Like we should.
Because we just have so much to say.
You want to do your what we're loving real quick?
I do. And what I'm loving this week is your recipe for beet ketchup.
That makes me so happy.
Dan made it.
Uh-huh.
Dan is like major Food and Drugs fan, especially during the pandemic when he's tried to make so many more staples. He's been making your apple butter on repeat.
Oh, great.
And now we have the beet ketchup, which you had said is the closest that you've had to prepared ketchup, Heinz ketchup. And I would never mistake it for Heinz ketchup, but it is very good. I've enjoyed it on roasted potatoes, veggie burgers, with the tofu scramble.
Yeah.
It's quite tasty.
Thank you. I mean, yeah, the beauty of the beet is you don't have to cook it down the way you have to cook down tomatoes when you make ketchup. And because beets are so sweet, you don't have to add as much sweetener, which is why I really like that ketchup.
It has a good texture, too.
Yeah.
I will say it's very ketchup-y in texture. So I think there's a recipe for this floating around on the internet. It's in your book.
It's in the Naturally Sweet.
Food in Jars. So we'll share that with you. And thanks, Marisa. That's been a yummy treat.
You're welcome. I'm so glad you like it. It makes me happy. Well, I think that's about it for this episode of Local Mouthful.
Our thanks go out to Dan Call for editing the show, to Saul Rosenbaum for designing our logo, and to Raina Rose for providing the music. And thank you for listening. If you like what you hear, make sure to subscribe via iTunes or your favorite podcasting app. Follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at Local Mouthful. Sign up for our newsletter, catch up on past episodes, and check out our show notes at localmouthful.com. Until next time, happy eating.